Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Our show today is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at the Moda Bake Shop or at Moda Fabrics online. Yay! So when a book comes across my desk, sometimes I get super excited because I look at it and I think, oh my gosh, I want to make everything in it, and I want this person to come and redo my house, like, entirely, like today. And that's what happened when I saw Kirsten Kogan's book, Urban Scandinavian Sewing. And luckily, she agreed to come on and talk to me, and I'll see if I can convince her about my house. Hi, Kirsten. How are you?
Hi, Sue. I'm doing great. How are you? Good to talk.
So is your home featured in here at all? Because, you know, I just want everything redone, like your book.
I almost started to laugh because, no, it is not. this, you know, it's so funny because we all have spaces that we want to redo. And believe me, I hear you loud and clear. I'd like to redo some of my own spaces as well. So.
Well, your book is called Urban Scandinavian Sewing. And I told you when I wrote with you that, you know, I grew up in Europe a good portion of my childhood and into my teens. And this sort of aesthetic was pretty much what was there. I was in Germany and I was in Belgium. Even though you think of those as being ornate, the modern of the time, what was current and contemporary, looked a lot like your book. Is this, you know, how did you come up with doing this book? Is this how you live normally?
Well, here's the deal. I'm three quarters Swedish and one quarter Finnish, and I have my folks have always been really passionate about collecting mid-century furniture, Danish, and collecting Scandinavian artifacts from their travels. So I kind of grew up in an environment where I was surrounded by a lot of really beautiful Scandinavian artifacts and furniture. But it wasn't until I went back to school for, I have a visual communications background, but I went back to school for interior design. And that's where I really started to appreciate the depth of the modern Scandinavian design movement. And the deeper I got into actually studying, you know, what that means, the more I appreciate it. And I think that modern Scandinavian design in general is not just a design aesthetic. I really think it's a philosophy and parallels so many of the aspects of our lives that we want to simplify. I think it's timely to be talking about this in our crazy, crazy, sped up lives.
We do have sped up lives. We have crazy lives, don't we? It's like
we do.
Did our great grandparents ever say that? Did they say they had crazy, busy lives? You know,
I know that they probably were dealing with other things, but,
right? Yeah,
yeah, but in a much, much different way.
In a much different way. So when you started making projects. I mean, you have a vast background, a professional background in design and things like that. But when you made, did you make quilts like that look like this? Is that how you sort of started, you know, making things?
I really, what started me on this path was I was working in-house for a garment company, mostly doing screen printed illustrations and embroidery applique for a mass market. So I consider myself to be somewhat of a like recovering staff designer because I had to work in a lot of different styles. And I was the last corporate job I held. We were working frantically, you know, doing our thing. And you know, I started to come home and start doing needle crafting again, like I did when I was a kid. And it was so therapeutic for me. And I realized, as one thing led to another, and we had the big financial crash in 2008, a lot of things changed. And it gave me an opportunity to say, you know, I think that I am ready to do something on my own. Mm-hmm. And I had these core skills that applied directly to the quilting, pattern sewing industry. And I had done some quilt, designed some quilting fabric for P&B Textiles over the years. So I was kind of getting tapped into the whole industry. Mm-hmm. And so that's what got started me on this path.
Oh, so when you kind of were doing your aesthetic, when you were like, okay, I'm stepping back, I'm going to make this my own, I'm going to do something that comes from my heart. How do you design like that? Do you pull images? You know, I'm always curious how people get that going.
Yeah, I like to have I think that I'm kind of a concept geek. I guess that's the way to start. And I think that when you have a general idea of something, a project you want to do, I like to tell people to start collecting imagery from magazines, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Let's say you want to illustrate a picture of a poppy. Start collecting images of poppies, but also collect images of interior spaces or color that's beautiful, texture. All of these things start to play off. And then as you start developing a sketch, I kind of live in an old school world and use new technology in a way that I didn't 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I'm at the drawing board and I always sketch everything by hand first. And then bring it into the computer and use Adobe products, Photoshop or Illustrator to get it digitized, so to speak.
Well, some of your pieces look like you may have painted them. I'm like looking in the book at you have like a table runner and a bread warmer that have these beautiful simplistic circles on them. And mm-hmm. they almost look like they're painted.
Yeah, I think that I've never heard anyone describe them that way, but I could see that. It's basically all made with linen and mm-hmm. Fused applique. So it's very simple to make, and you could approach that in a number of different ways, not just using solids, but using different patterns or whatever.
Yeah, I like them because they just seem so doable, and mm-hmm. your whole book is like that. Why did you call it urban? What about it, and made you use that word to describe the style?
Well, I think I used urban as a replacement for modern for a few reasons, and I think modern is a little overused sometimes. But I also wanted to pay homage to the Industrial Revolution, the Scandinavian Industrial Revolution in particular. Mm-hmm. That's where the whole modern Scandinavian design aesthetic emerged, when they started mass producing things that had to be done by hand, and mm-hmm. people started moving into the cities. Most of us live in urban areas today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's why I use that word.
And they're very timeless designs. I think this look that you have is something that that's why I could relate to it. It's like, oh, not that it was presented exactly like that, but it felt so familiar.
That's really nice to hear. If something feels happy to me, mm-hmm. essentially, then I feel like there's potential for other people to feel that way too. So,
what's super lovely about your book, really, Kirsten, is these stories. You have stories in here, and you have recipes. It's like Swedish meatballs.
Thank you.
Of course.
That was really fun for me, and it actually became much more personal than I initially intended. Mm-hmm. But I like that about it, and I think that, for me, being able to share and build a community of people to have a conversation about what it means to share our lives, that to me is special. So if it speaks to anyone on that level, that's wonderful.
And you did it in some seasonal, you kind of broke it up into seasonal projects loosely.
I did. Yeah. And in particular, I broke it into two, winter mm-hmm. and summer. Because those are really the two main seasons in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
Winter is so intense and dark and where people depend on each other to get through those dark months. Mm-hmm. And then summer, it's like everybody just bursts out of their skin practically in celebration. And the midsummer celebrations in Scandinavia are right up there with Christmas, mm-hmm. the Christmas holidays. Mm-hmm. I actually had the opportunity to go to, I went to Sweden and Helsinki, Finland, right during midsummer 2 summers ago. And my mom and I traveled together, and we got to Stockholm on Midsummer's Eve. Mm. And literally, the city was completely empty. I didn't even think there was going to be anyone to check us in at the hotel. Everybody just, everything shuts down. It's a big deal.
So what do they do? Do they go on vacation, or they just sort of?
Yes. Okay. Oh, if there's one thing that the Scandinavians are good at, it is taking time out for vacation. So everybody, it's just really important for everybody just to take a break and celebrate summer and be together and drink good drinks and eat good food and listen to good music.
And everybody has to also check out your book, because you embody all of that with projects that are doable, and you use all kinds of materials. We have about a minute. Can you tell me your favorite project in the book? I know that's hard.
One of my favorite projects is the Pocket Pals for kids. Mm-hmm. Because they're just playful, and it's basically using a simple, very simple template to add a pocket, but then using felt, simple felt shapes that kids could actually participate in, and making little stuffed pals that they can carry around with them. And I had a lot of fun making those and watching kids play with those.
Well, everybody can visit you at your site, Kirsten Cogan, KirstenCogan.com, and see a lot of the projects from the book. And you also have articles at your blog. So, you know, I just have loved looking through your book. You did a fabulous job.
Thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate it very, very much.
Well, we will be right back after this break with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
The 1 million pillowcase challenge is hitting the road. Come sew with the staff of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine at the Sewing and Stitchery Expo in Puyallup, Washington, February 26th through March 1st of 2015. Everything needed to make the pillowcases will be available for free. Pillowcases will be donated to the children being treated at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital. Stop by the Showplex and use your sewing skills to help a good cause. If you can't stay to make a pillowcase, no worries. Drop off your completed pillowcase to add to the total. See you there.
Reaching out from the heartland of the United States with quality programming, this is TokiNet Radio.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I recently had the opportunity to teach with Sherry Heise of Border Creek Station Designs. She is an amazing designer. I mean, her quilts are incredible. You've probably made one, even if you didn't realize it, that Sherry was behind all this. Well, the other thing that Sherry is an expert at is mystery quilts. She hosts dozens and dozens of them over the years, and I've asked her she come on to tell us a little bit about that because so many people are interested in mysteries. So, Sherry, thanks for being here.
Thank you for asking me, Pat.
I am so glad to talk to you, and I want to make that snowflake quilt. Tell me the name of that one. Oh, my
gosh. That is called Winter Joy.
Oh, my gosh, Winter Joy. You're very optimistic, you know. and you live in Canada, so I suppose that snow under that is your snow.
Yes, it is. We still have 2 feet of snow on the ground.
Oh, well, I love that quilt. It is spectacular. Your designs are gorgeous. How long have you been designing patterns?
I've been designing patterns about 15 years now.
Yeah, that's about the same time I have. I think we've been in the business about the same amount of time. When did first explain what a mystery quilt is, Sherry? Because I think a lot of people, you know, they might hear the word, but they're like, what does that mean if they've never done one?
Well, I like to say that a mystery quilt is really an adventure in quilting because you're starting off with a project that you have no idea what the quilt is going to look like until the very end. But in our case, the project is a little bit of sewing and a little bit of piecing every month. Mm-hmm. And you know, it stays as a mystery until you get to the end when all of a sudden all the pieces start coming together and you go, aha, and then eventually your blocks come together and it becomes a whole quilt. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that was what it was going to be.
I think yours are really fun because I've done mysteries where it's like they kind of know the layout and they know it's going to be like a single block. But you have yours where like you're making parts and you don't know where the parts are going to go, right?
Yes. And that all started because the very first mystery that I designed was a joke. It was designed to be a joke for my quilting buddies. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to keep it a secret as long as I could. So the only way I could do that was to break it out into unrecognizable parts, mm-hmm. or what I felt would be unrecognizable to them, mm-hmm. only because I wanted to drive them crazy. So what I do now, I do basically the same thing, is that I break it out into a little bit of cutting and a little bit of sewing each month, mm-hmm. and so that there's not, you know, the same idea where it's not recognizable parts until things start coming together eventually.
And how long does an average mystery that you produce run? Are they a whole year or are they shorter?
Typically our mystery quilts run for 8 months, mm-hmm. and right from beginning to end, from fabric selection right through to the end. And then we always recommend that the shop have a reveal. But I don't say 9 months because that always, as women, it always reminds us of pregnancy.
Yeah, it's like 8 months, 8 months, you're early. That's
eight months is good.
Yeah. Oh, now when a person thinks, you know, let's say the quilter is like, you know, I think I want to try this. Because yours are primarily hosted within a store, many of them will have a kit with fabric already set up. That's when we were co-teaching our own classes, but you had like two different colorways the students could pick. Is that usual?
Yes, it's usual because first it helped the shops with their customer service because they had something that in a mystery quilt, there's nothing to show.
Right.
And there's nothing
yeah.
for a shop to market it. Mm-hmm. So often a shop would have complications in saying, well, you know, yeah, it's great, but they wanted something in hand to show. So having the fabric pre-selected mm-hmm. Gives them the opportunity to show swatches of the fabric. If you love the fabric, you'll love the quilt, that kind
yeah.
of idea.
Yeah.
And it also encourages or gives the scaredy quilters mm-hmm. an opportunity to go, you know what, I don't have to select my own fabric. So mm-hmm. half the work is already, or the challenge is done for me. And secondly, you know, they will know that if the shop owner has seen the quilt itself in those fabrics and she's saying it's lovely, then I can just relax and have fun in the adventure of it all.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fabulous service that you and the shops that you work with provide for people, because that's the part that's the hardest for somebody who's not adventurous or doesn't want to mess up, or they don't make a lot of quilts every year, so they don't want to spend the time and not like the result. But if you like the fabric, you're going to like the quilt, right?
Exactly. And some shops do expand on that and put together selections of their own as well. So they may have three or four selections, including ours, and then some other options for their shops or for their quilters to choose from. And some shops open it up that if the quilter doesn't like, for instance, the blue that I selected, then, you know, they help them select fabric that would still look good. And they're able to guide them that way, too.
Now, do you have a list on your website of shops that are actively running mysteries? So, like, if somebody wanted to try this and, you know, maybe had to mail order because there's nobody near them?
Yes, we do. We are actually in the process of creating a new website, which is supposed to be going live this week. And on there, we do have a list of all the shops that are hosting it. And right now, we have over 250 shops.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot. There's a lot of options then, so people can find something near them. And that's at BorderCreekStation.com. That's where all this is going to be, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yay. And for those of you who like to collect the Quilt Sampler magazines, go back to your fall 2010 sampler, and Sherry has the quilt in there for Quilter's Cupboard. So go check that out. And I know everybody keeps those, Sherry. They keep the sampler issues so they can visit the shops. It's always a good thing. Now, let's switch gears a little bit, because I wanted to talk about two different things with you. You love to do pieced borders, which, you know, a lot of times quilters, when they get to the border, they're like, okay, done, you know, put a big piece of fabric on there, or no border. How do you think about borders? Just talk about that.
Well, I used to think the same way, but when I first started quilting way back when, it was common to have buy a length of fabric, cut it into 4 10-inch strips of fabric and sew it on your quilt, and you're done. And it's boring. So I like piecing. So the very first piece border that I did, it just didn't feel like a border. And when I put it on the quilt, I thought, wow, it just did something so much more to the quilt than that 10-inch swatch of fabric. And I just thought, wow. And then I realized that I really hated sewing those long seams, and that piecing the border took my pain away from sewing those seams, that I was sewing piecing onto other piecing. And I thought it just felt so wonderful not to have to put another boring border on. And I just loved them. I thought I just loved what it did to the quilt center. It just made the quilt so much more glorious.
It really does. It's a whole nother. Now, you do some piece, but you also do some applique too for your borders, right?
Oh, absolutely. Any quilting technique, that applique, anything like that, that just offsets and adds that bonus, because I think really the quilt includes the border and includes the binding. And sometimes if we don't spend just as much time on the border, our quilt center's lost. It deserves the best that we can put into it.
Okay, so now you're all going to have to up your skills here and do. And we can do that snowflake one, because I will notice that it has gorgeous stars in its border.
It's worth the pain.
No pain. So with you told me the other kind of interesting thing in your business, your personal life, you just made like a huge move from being in a very populated area to a very unpopulated area.
Yes, we did.
How's
it
that
was
going?
A sudden It's going well, although it's very cold. So we moved from a town of 85,000 to a village of 300.
Oh, my.
And we go from pizza delivery at any point of time, whether we were working 24/7, we could order pizza, to where nowhere can we ever get pizza delivery at all.
Ever.
So my husband says, but I bought you a wood-burning pizza oven, honey. We can have pizza anytime.
Oh.
The downside is I have to make it.
Yes, yes. So did you ever live in a small town before?
We did, actually. I grew up in a small town. So it just seems like feels a little bit like going home, except I'm 50 years older.
Oh, I'm not even sure that number can be called a town. That'd be like a little village or just a collect. Do you have a downtown?
No, there's a post office and that's it.
That's it. Oh, okay. Okay. Did you get a big studio out of the Sherry?
Yes, we did.
Oh, good. Oh, good. That's
it was
important.
So for that, it was worth it.
Yeah, it was. Well, Sherry, this has been so much fun. I enjoyed meeting you and teaching on the trip, and thank you for coming and sharing.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Pat. It was a pleasure.
You can visit Sherry Heise at BorderCreekStation.com and look for her mystery quilts if you've been dying to try one but are really uncertain. Find somebody with a kit. We'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Amber Johnson writes at the site called A Little Bit Biased, and she writes all kinds of wonderful tutorials and shares her quilt making process. She's also written a book called Vintage Vibe with Martingale, the Patchwork Place, and it is tagline, traditional quilts, fresh fabric. And I just love the color cover quilt, which has huge, gorgeous Dresden plates and beautiful quilting. So Amber's going to come on here and chat with me. Thanks for being here, Amber.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
I know. Excited. It's so much fun, isn't it? Just come on and chat quilts. Yeah. I love the projects in your book, but I want to first ask you a little bit about, you have learned to quilt a long time ago from your grandmother. Did you ever think you were going to have a business from it?
You know, honestly, when I first got started, I didn't. It was just a hobby. And, probably I think it was like 9 or 10 years later that I started designing patterns. But I would often make up my own patterns. My first quilt was actually just based off of one I saw in a store. And I thought, I can make that. And I went and drew up a little pattern and got to work. It took me a few years to actually finish it, but but I kind of always made my own pattern. So,
yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's how I think a lot of people in the business are. They've, you know, they're creative and they do their own thing. And then other people like what you've done and then they want it. And so that's... Isn't that how it happens? And they say, well, can I have the pattern for that? You know, how did you do that? You named your pattern business after your grandmother, right?
Right. Yeah. All of her great grandchildren call her Gigi. Mm-hmm. So that's, I named it after her. And I guess it gets a little confusing when I've got my name and my blog name and my pattern business name. It's all different, but it is named after her, and I love to think about her as I quilt. So
I think that's awesome. It's really, my grandmothers didn't sew even, so I don't have anybody like that. I know. Can you believe it? They did not
sew. Were you self-taught then?
Well, yeah, pretty much, except that I took a home ec, you know, some sewing and home ec. My mother didn't sew either. So, I needed to sew.
That's neat that you could feel that and you went for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more common than you realize when I go out and ask people, you know, that didn't have somebody to teach them. It's like if your grandmother had knitted and you don't care for knitting, then you wouldn't knit. You know, it's like you probably wanted to sew. You ended up at working in a quilt shop at one point. What do you think that did for your design aesthetic?
Gosh, you know, it's probably helped me a lot to kind of hone in on what works and what doesn't. I love when people come in and they want some help picking out fabrics. I feel like just all the experience I've had quilting over the years and now working in the quilt shop have really helped me to realize, you know, what works, what different types of prints and scales, and just to get a better sense for color. You know, there's clear colors and muddy colors, and you know, it kind of depends what you're going for. So, you know, I love to see and help, you know, people achieve what they're looking for. So
it gives you like that kind of immersion, doesn't it, Amber? Like you're in a shop, it's like you're picking colors like all day long some days. So and you're probably all over the board. Does your shop carry all different kinds of fabric, or is it more like zoned into one style?
We do have a little bit of everything. We've got a little bit of 30s and Civil War, but we mostly carry modern, kind of modern traditional fabrics. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of bright, happy fabrics. So yeah. I think when I started working there, like I started really traditional and kind of some of those muddy colors. And then I think when I started there, I realized that quilts could be really happy and bright and fun. So I definitely am more modern now. So
yes. Tell me about the book now, the Vintage Vibe. How did you come up with the name and then develop the quilts to go with it? Or did you have this collection of quilts and then the name came afterwards?
Well, let's see. One of the quilts in the book is called Vintage Vibe because, that particular quilt was inspired by a catalog that I received in the mail that had a chair on it that had this pattern cut out of the metal of this chair. And on the cover of the catalog, it said Vintage Vibe. Hmm. And so I named the quilt that and based my pattern off of that metal cutout chair. And I mentioned to them that I thought that would be a fun title for the book, but they finally came back to me in the end and said, this is what we're thinking. We'd like to name it Vintage Vibe, Traditional Quilts, Fresh Fabrics. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I love it. Let's go with that. So we were all happy, I think, with that title. So
that particular quilt is a two-color quilt that you designed, and it has amazing quilting on it that is do you quilt that one?
No, I really don't do very much of my own quilting. I have a few different long arm quilters that I use. And Kayleen Perry, she's based in Lehi, Utah. She quilted that and several others of the quilts in the book. But I took her a picture of a hand quilted quilt that I saw on Pinterest, and I said, and it was really similar to that. I said, can you do this on that quilt? And she took the pattern and digitized it. I think she tweaked it a little bit, but it was great because it kept that antique look, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what made me think about it, is that it does have a very, it's an overall repeat of like a large oval with feather outline and then curves on the inside, and it just suits it so well.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad we decided to go with that. You know, it's always a little scary because you don't know. It's hard to visualize it, but it turned out great. And I think that quilt really needed it because it's such a simple design, but the quilting is just amazing. So
yeah,
really takes it up a notch, I think.
Yeah. Sometimes the quilting will really make the quilt just that, you know, that much more spectacular. You also applique, and in this book you have several quilts with applique. What type of applique do you like to do?
You know, I've learned a lot of different methods, and I like to do a lot. I guess I usually use the freezer paper method, and that is described in the book. But I think it just kind of depends on the project, what you're going for, and whether you're wanting it to be a really special heirloom or if you're just wanting something quick and fun. So I also teach you how to do raw edge applique and trying to remember what the other, let's see, I did freezer paper and I'm trying to remember, oh, machine applique. So that's a good one if the quilt's going to be used a lot. And I think I did that on the rainy day table runner. And I think there was one other one that had the machine applique. So
tell me, when you do your machine applique, describe the process. You know, because everybody's a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess first you kind of have to decide if you're going to turn your edges under or not. And so I use the freezer paper method when I want to turn my edges under. And then, or I use heat and bond a lot if I'm not going to turn the edges under. And then I love to use the mono poly invisible thread. And you just use that on your top thread and then a coordinating color for your bobbin thread. And then I just do a little zigzag stitch. And I describe all of that in the book, but it's pretty easy. Takes a, you know, might want to practice a little bit before you get started, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
So with the zigzag, are you making it really, really tiny? Because you have some nice close-ups and it's hard to see it. So it must be pretty small zigzag.
It is pretty small. Yeah. I guess maybe about an eighth of an inch long and eighth of an inch apart. But the monopoly invisible thread really helps to not see it.
And your bobbin thread, when you're doing that, are you keeping that the color of your background or the color of your applique or just?
Yeah. The background fabric. I used it on the growing up quilt. It has kind of a navy blue background and then it's got some flower petals that are machine applique on. And so I used the invisible thread on top and a dark thread on the bottom to match the background.
I think that's always the thing when people start using the clear threads, they're really not sure, you know, what bobbin color, because it, you know, it's, they're different weight threads. So the domestic machines sometimes, you know, they pop up a little bit, the bobbin. So if it's your background, you're not going to see it, which is good. It's good.
Well, I took a class one time where they had us wind the bobbin with invisible thread, but I think that's a little bit tricky. It can get a little bit tangled up. So I think as long as you have a thread that matches your background fabric, it usually won't show through. And if your tension's right, it won't pull up.
Yeah. Yeah. Good tip. Very good tip. See a lot of things because of being in a quilt shop environment. There's a lot of different products that, you know, your shop carries or the people bring in or they ask about. Is there anything that you've seen lately that you've tried that you really liked?
Let's see. There's, you know, I went to market in at the fall market in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I saw a few products that I'm in love with right now. And one of them, I kept going back to this booth. It was for Redgate Stitcheries. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's the cutest stuff. It's cross-stitch, but she uses modern materials. So you can cross-stitch on a bamboo necklace charm.
I saw a picture.
Did you see it? It's really cool, and I don't cross stitch very much, but she sells kits. She has an Etsy shop. She sells kits, and you can make these handmade necklaces just by cross stitching on the wood, or you can make she'll frame them sometimes in embroidery hoops, or she'll make ornaments out of them. I just thought it was really unique and a fun little quick project. So that's one thing I'm loving right now.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
So
there was also.
I was going to say we have like about a minute. So
okay.
Do you have when you go to a quilt show, what do you get focused on? Do you look at the quilts? Do you look at the products?
Gosh. Okay. I guess it's hard. Like. But I do look at the products. You know, I'm a big fabric lover, obviously, so I'm always kind of interested in what's coming out, what are some of the new fabric companies and designers that I should be paying attention to. I don't use a ton of notions,
so
I mean, there's a ruler. What was that?
So fabric. Fabric is what you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
Well, Amber, we are out of time, and this has been fantastic to meet you and have a chance to talk.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much for having me on today. It was fun to talk with you.
You are so welcome. We're going to be back right after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and you can visit Amber at let me give you that site again, alittlebitbiased.com. So sometimes I meet people by sort of stalking their booth at the trade show until I can say hello. And that's what happened with Violet Craft. I fell in love with her fabric, and now she's going to talk to me on the show. Yay! Hi, Violet.
Hi, Pat.
I know. It's like you just round and round, you know, till the crowd disperses so you can get in and look at everything. I love your fabric. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So you and I share sort of a funky common path, and then I'm learned, like more and more people do once I talk to them, is that you were in computers and I was in computers. You had a second career before you entered the quilting industry, and I had a very tiny, small second career before I entered the quilting. Your second career was quite impressive. Yes. I mean, you got into fabric via designing children's clothes.
I did. And all of that came from actually being laid off from my corporate career in software. I worked at Enron. And we had just found out that we were pregnant with our first daughter at we found out about 2 weeks before the layoff. So I sat at home and started obsessing over baby clothes, nesting, and dusting off the sewing machine, and just started finding, actually I found this community of handmade children's clothing sellers on eBay, of all places. And it's actually where I met Sandy Henderson and Patty Young many, many, many years ago. And then that just wasn't enough for me. So within about 6 months, I started a wholesale line and turned it into a business.
Did you have to have a warehouse, and do you have to have all kinds of people sewing for you?
No. Well, I should have probably had a lot of people sewing for me. I usually did most of it myself. At the largest point, we had 125 plus stores in the U.S. and 7 countries, and I was still sewing almost every garment.
Oh my goodness.
I had a small boutique sewing house here in Portland that would make things, you know, when it just got too out of hand for a couple of seasons. But I did have a small, it was kind of a large studio, but I shared it with several other businesses. So we had a space where we could keep all of that to finally move it out of the living room and the garage and the bedroom.
So at some point you shifted and found the quilt industry. How did that happen?
Well, I was always buying at quilt market. When I went wholesale, kind of the transition of going wholesale was I attended my very first international quilt market in Portland in 2001. And I walked in and saw Amy Butler's first booth, and it's for Gypsy Caravan. And my jaw dropped. And I just stood there, and I went and ordered the entire collection and sat down on the floor while the people I was with, my mother and her group, continued to shop. And I sketched out what the wholesale line would be and came up with my plan. So that was kind of my introduction into quilt market and fabric. And
Wow. You started designing for Michael Miller fabric lines. When you were making clothing, you were obviously sketching clothing, doing all that. When did you start sketching fabric and deciding that maybe this was a transition?
Well, the business had gotten large enough that I really needed to set the line apart from all of the other lines out there. And at the time, a lot of people were using the exact same collections that I was using. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to differentiate the collection with my own fabric. So I started to sketch ideas for what I wanted those to look like, and I started talking to my sales rep at the time that I was buying most of the fabric from about the company printing fabric for me. And so we were in talks about them printing the fabric when I decided not to go forward with growing the line. It had just become really overwhelming, and I actually never thought about developing this huge line. It just sort of happened. I just kept doing it, and it grew and grew and grew. And when I actually sat back and asked myself if I wanted to keep doing it, I really didn't. So I decided not to go forward. And they said, well, we love these prints that you've done. If you can round this out into a quilting collection and bring it back to us, we'd love to see it when you do that. So I spent about 2 years closing out Kung Fu Bambini, the name of my line, and then developing a line to take to show to Michael Miller.
Was that Was that Waterfront? Was that the first one?
No, it's Peacock Lane.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Peacock Lane, it was for 2011, 2010, mm-hmm. 2011, about 4 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember which one was the first one. I just remembered meeting you. You know, it's like, it's just all about you,
Violet.
Well,
at Peacock Lane, no one had any idea who I was because I had been doing, you know, except in the children's clothing industry, I'd been doing clothing. I hadn't been doing commercial patterns or anything like that. So I was very new to that side of the market, even though I had been attending Quilt Market for 8 or 9 years before that as a buyer.
Mm-hmm. Your process for coming up with a fabric line, can you just tell me a little bit about what you do? I'm always fascinated how we're all so different.
Yeah, we are all so different. even within companies, we're all so different. My collections are always based on real things that are happening in my life. And my collections generally have a story that go along with them. You know, the story of Peacock Lane was about these elephants on parade, and every story, every collection, therefore, has had a story. And it's all things that are in my surroundings. So, for instance, I'm currently in stores is Brambleberry Ridge, and Brambleberry Ridge is all based upon this 1950s mid-century home that we've been living in for the last 2 years, but then also tying that in with my love of all things from the 50s and my great-grandmother, Adeline, that was around when I was small and that I spent a lot of time with. And so I incorporated all of those things into the collection.
Oh, neat. When you do that, are you creating like a visual display to help you, or do you kind of just go from sketches?
Well, I start off in my notebook just writing out ideas and things that I think of. I try to draw from my memories because almost all of the collections have some vintage appeal, but then also some very, you know, current modern appeal. So, like with that collection, I just sat down and tried to remember spending time in my grandmother's house and remembering the furniture that was there and the wallpaper and her jewelry and, you know, all of these things and what I really loved about that, and then really going around and taking photographs of things in my neighborhood and, you know, the flowers that I really wanted to incorporate and these different things. And then when I start to build the collection, I work almost entirely off of photographs. So I take my photography and I draw and sketch off of the photography and then start to, once it's in the Illustrator, then I start to play with the elements and move them around and really kind of tear them apart and put them back together again.
Can people see on your website all the lines? Do you have like a page, or they go to like Michael Miller and see that?
Yes. But I don't think Michael Miller has any of the archives on there, but I have it on mine. There's an information tab, and on there you can get to all four of the collections.
Oh, okay, good. Because it's interesting to look at a person's, you know, how they do their lines, because some of the lines are really similar and yours are, you know, very, very distinct. You know, they don't sort of blend from one to the other, do they?
Yeah, I don't. I hope that they, and I think so far, they look like me. Like you can start to see that they look like me, but at the same time, they're very different from each other. So I want them to always be changing, but I also want them to be usable together. So, yeah.
Yeah, because the colors are similar, so they work together, which is always nice.
Yes.
Yeah. And you have now moved on to a paper piecing frenzy, haven't you?
I have.
That's what you told me.
I really have.
The deer is just out of this world.
Thank you.
I love the deer. I love all of them, but the deer, I don't know how many people tell you that, but the deer is so unique. You know, have a lot of people been making that one and sharing photos of it?
They have. And Instagram was probably the best place to see that. There's a Forest Abstractions hashtag that you can go and look at all the animals that everyone's making. And everyone has their own favorite animal. I really thought that overwhelmingly it would be the deer, and the deer probably still wins but only by a slight margin. The squirrel and the rabbit have a whole lot of love as well.
Yeah, the rabbit's really cute. That's well, you know what I kind of like about it, Violet, is that they're patchworked, you know, so I don't know. It's just that whole feeling of that patchworked body of it. It's not just a single piece of fabric.
It's really hard to tell, and this is on purpose, where the lines intersect and how those fabrics come together. I didn't want any of it to look like a grid. And when you make one, you find out that none of it is a grid.
You're such a tricky person here. this. Now, you do have, which is really nice, you do have a couple of alternative animals that are people can try your paper piecing style of pattern from your website for free. You have a couple small ones, a couple flowers, and a little mouse. So that's because everybody's style is so different. So it's nice to give it a try.
Yeah. So far, there are four blocks. There will be six. And they add on to the four subtractions quilt so that if you want to make your quilt larger, they fit on the right-hand side of the column. But there's a trillium block, wild carrot, the field mouse, and I just added the hummingbird last week. So there are two more coming with their surprises.
I see. And you actually have right now on February 23rd, 2015, if anybody goes to look at that page, you show where those extra ones lay out for your original quilt. So it's like the deer, I do some paper piecing, but not tons, but your deer is so fabulous. And it's something that I think I might have to do for my uncle because he would like that. He would really like that. What is new in the stores right now?
Brambleberry Ridge is the newest collection that's in stores right now. It's all the soft pastels, but then it has a touch of the same vibrant color, a lot of the same vibrant colors from Waterfront Park.
Perfect.
And then it also has a lot of the gold metallics in it as well.
Violet, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Pat.
This has been awesome. Everybody go visit Violet Craft at violetcraft.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we will be back next week. You can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com. We both have newsletters. All of my guests, if you go out and visit them, check out what's going on their blogs, on their websites. There's just lots of fun things that can happen, and everybody is very generous and gives out some of a taste of their works. You can download free things. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.